The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Andrea, for those of you that I've not met before. The topic that I thought of exploring today is not an uncommon question to come up here, and so it came up this past week, and I just thought I would explore it tonight. And the question is basically, what's the difference between mindfulness and concentration? And these two words, mindfulness and concentration, are often used here, and we talk about both of them a lot. And so it's not surprising, I think, that there's some desire for a little bit of clarification or understanding of exactly what these different words mean and how they are experienced in our practice. And I'd like to distinguish first between two different things around these two, because concentration and mindfulness, when used in that way, you know, saying, you know, I'm concentrated or I'm mindful, they're referring to qualities of mind, factors in the mind. And the question about what's the difference between concentration and mindfulness sometimes may be related to the quality or factor of mind, and I'll address that part of the question, but often the question is about what's the difference between mindfulness practice and concentration practice? And so I'll explore that question too, just to fully answer the question, or fully explore. I don't know that answer is the right word here. To fully explore the terrain of this question. So I'll start with mindfulness. In a simple way, you know, mindfulness, you know, we talk a lot about mindfulness here. This is a mindfulness meditation is what we often talk about practicing here. And the quality of mindfulness, the base for that quality, is a very kind of ordinary quality of mind, a very a factor in our mind that is just naturally present in being human. And this is a kind of a self-reflective capacity of our mind, the capacity for us to know what's happening while it's happening. That's the base for mindfulness. We could call it awareness, mindfulness, something like that. I don't know, is that too loud? I'm thinking it's a little echoey. Is this loudness comfortable for everybody? Is this okay? We'll leave it. So there's that basic, you know, knowing what's happening while it's happening, awareness, mindfulness. That is what the mindfulness that we cultivate or explore in our practice is based in. And yet, just simply being aware, as one of my teachers kind of says, the title of one of the books one of my teachers wrote is, awareness alone is not enough in terms of helping us to understand, free our minds from the ways that we get caught. This whole practice here of mindfulness practice here is based in trying to understand, why do we get caught? Why do we suffer? Why do we struggle so much? And this, the practice of mindfulness begins to help us to not only understand how we get caught and why we get caught, but because of that understanding, the mind begins to let go of the ways that we get caught. And I'll talk more about that a little bit later when I talk about the practices. So mindfulness in our meditation, the kind of mindfulness we're trying to cultivate, is not just simple awareness. Awareness alone is not enough. If just think about, there's different ways we can think about people being mindful. You know, one kind of neutral way would be the mindfulness that you might cultivate or need in order to do a sport really well. You know, just to learn how to engage in that sport really well, you need to be mindful of the rules of the game. You need to be mindful of how your body is moving, mindful of where the other players are. So there's a kind of an awareness of what's happening in the present moment while you're engaged in that sport. That's an awareness, that's a mindfulness. It's not particularly directed in the way that the Buddha encouraged us to direct that quality of mind. And I'll talk more about that in just a minute. That's a kind of neutral way that mindfulness can function. And this is the way I think that the kind of mindfulness that we're maybe most familiar with from just our everyday lives, whether we're aware or not of what's happening around us. Another kind of mindfulness, somebody could be very, very mindful, very aware of what's happening in the present moment, very present while they are breaking into somebody's house to steal. The movement, the silence, to make sure that you're not waking people up, you know, so there's a kind of a very alert quality perhaps to that person who's broken into the house. Now again, that's a kind of awareness that we're not encouraged to cultivate. So the important part here in terms of what we would call right mindfulness or wise mindfulness or skillful mindfulness is the intention that is motivating, or the intention that is connected with, I should say perhaps, the intention that's connected with why we are being aware. So if we're being aware in order to do a sport, that's, you know, kind of neutral. Being aware in order to do something that would cause harm or suffering to somebody, that's not the direction we want to go. The direction the Buddha suggested that we head is the direction towards non-harming, towards freeing ourselves from the ways that we're caught. And so beginning to explore with mindfulness, how is it that we struggle? What is it that happens? So it's not just about being aware of what's happening in the present moment. But practically speaking, this mindfulness of our practice not only is aware of what's happening in the present moment, but is also aware of what our relationship to that experience is. Do we like it? Do we not like it? Do we want it to continue? Do we want to get rid of it? This terrain of our relationship to the experience, this is the kind of one of the key places where the Buddha pointed and said, you know, this is where we get caught. This is where we suffer. This is how we get stuck. Things happen, we don't like them. We want to get rid of them. We resist them. We want to push them away. Things happen, we like them. We want more of them. We want to hold on to them. We're afraid we're going to lose them. So the ways that we struggle, the ways that we suffer in our lives is so much related to how we are relating to experience. And so this wise mindfulness encourages us towards a non-judgmental, non-reactive relationship to experience. And we move in that direction by exploring what is my relationship to this experience? Because we can't simply, you know, flip a switch and say, oh, aversion's happening. Oh, that's not helpful. I'll just not have aversion anymore. You know, that's not the way our minds work. But we can recognize, oh, there's this thing happening and there's aversion happening. Like I was suggesting in the guided meditation, you know, if sounds were happening. At one point there was some kind of talking outside, and that's often a kind of sound that we resist in meditation. And so, you know, I encouraged you to check in. You know, is there a sense of liking or not liking that's happening at the same time that hearing is happening? So that relationship is being able to be aware not only of what's happening, but our relationship to it. That's the direction that this quality of mindfulness goes. And so it's not simply this mindfulness of our practice is not simply just awareness of what's happening in the present moment. It's awareness to what's happening with the intention towards understanding suffering. With the intention towards understanding that when there is struggle, when there is suffering, there's something happening here. It's not inherent in what's happening in the world. And thank goodness for that. If our ease or peace were completely contingent on what was happening in the world, there would be like almost no possibility for peace. But our ease and peace does not have to be contingent on what's happening in the world. And this is the exploration of wise mindfulness. What is it that I'm not at ease about? That could be the whole of our practice. Where am I not at ease? And how is there something happening in this system? Some tightening, some resistance, some holding on. On Sunday, I talked and I said that this exploration of non-reactivity, of seeing or recognizing in the Buddhist teaching that our peace is not dependent on the world, but dependent on our relationship to what we're experiencing, whether we're resisting it or holding on to it, and that resistance or holding on can fall away. Now that sense in our usual state of mind or our familiar state of mind of what it means to be non-reactive, we think it means to be non-active. So we think if we're not reacting out of aversion or greed, then we would just kind of sit around like a lump on a log and not do anything. And that's not the way it works, actually. So, you know, this wise mindfulness begins to take us to a place where we can meet the world without reaction, but the what's called from us when we meet the world with wise mindfulness isn't sitting still and not doing anything. What's called from us is compassion, and what's called from us is kind action. So this is the direction that mindfulness heads. So that's a little bit about mindfulness. And concentration, this factor of concentration, just a simple definition of concentration is just non-distractedness. The mind is not distracted. It's settled. It's basically composed. It basically is kind of stable or present over a period of time. One maybe definition of concentration could be when mindfulness becomes more continuous. When we're mindful over a period of time, that's actually a definition of concentration. When mindfulness is stable over a period of time, the mind is not pulled out into thoughts, it's not thinking about the past or the future, it's here. It's here for a period of time. And that stability of mind is the state of concentration. There's different ways that state can happen. And this is one of the key pieces for understanding the whole, you know, kind of different terrain of all the different practices that different kinds of meditation practices that are out there, and you hear different teachers talking about different things, and it's like, how do they all fit together? So there's different ways that concentration can happen. And the most common way, the most familiar way, the way that we're most, that word evokes for us, is when we focus on something. We pick something and we put our attention on it. Might be the breath. Might be, you know, we can get really concentrated reading a book, or really concentrated. We get kind of absorbed into something. That's that kind of, sometimes called one-pointed concentration, where the mind just kind of just gets really still. It moves into just one thing. This kind of concentration tends towards, very in meditation at least, this, you know, if we If we pick some experience and stay with that experience, it tends to create very pleasant states of mind. The mind gets really happy, very peaceful. The body actually starts to feel really good. So this kind of concentration has some appeal to it. It feels really good, and it creates very beautiful states of mind. So that's one kind of concentration, and you could practice that. Well, I'll talk more about the practice in a minute. I'll get there. The other kind of concentration, or another kind of concentration, is what's called moment-to-moment concentration. And this is where the awareness or the mind is not wandering. It's not, you know, thinking about things in the past. It's completely here in the present moment. And yet it is not just absorbed into one thing. It's aware of the incredible flow of experience in the present moment. So this is a kind of concentration which moment to moment would be aware a sound, a sight, a body sensation, an emotion, a sound, a dryness, a pressure, a movement, a sound, a calmness, a just moment after moment, just the flow of experience, aware of what's happening in the present moment. Not necessarily just picking one thing to stay with, but aware of the dynamism of what's actually happening here and now. This is a kind of concentration. And in both of these two, in the one-pointed concentration and in this what's called moment-to-moment concentration, the stability of mindfulness is the thing that links them. The mindfulness being aware of what's happening in the present moment with this intention towards understanding suffering, that right mindfulness. So the stability of mindfulness, or the continuity of mindfulness with one object, you know, that's that the mind is just moment after moment mindful of that object, moment after moment mindful of the experience of breathing. Most often, very often, we talk about mindful, you know, using the breath as a place to settle down the mind. And this is part of how it works. We put the attention on the breath, and when the mind wanders, we let go of that and come back to the breath. And so slowly through that practice, the mind begins to kind of settle down on that experience. So that's the continuity of mindfulness on that experience is that what that form of concentration is. Another way of practicing would just simply be, what's this? What's this? What's this? Just awareness, moment after moment. This mind is stable. The mind isn't wandering off, like in the experience of the hearing. Maybe some of you had even a few moments of just kind of landing in the flow of hearing and not like drawn out to when the train went by, not drawn out to think about the train or to follow the sound of the train, but just hearing the experience of the arising of train and the experience of the sound of the air conditioner and the breathing of people in the room and a car going away, just kind of just the flow, very present for the moment-to-moment experience. Key distinction between these two kinds of mindfulness, I mean these two kinds of concentration, the one-pointed concentration where you pick one experience and stay with that, in that kind of concentration, the mind, the experience, tends to become more and more still. It's like less and less is there an experience of movement and change. With the other kind of concentration, with the concentration around moment-to-moment concentration, change becomes really highlighted. That is what the meditation is exploring, is the experience of changing, the changing nature of life. In the one-pointed concentration, the peace kind of comes because there's not much happening. And the mind is like, it gets really quiet. There's not much going on. There's very little reactivity because the mind has just settled on this one thing. So peace, ease, happiness come because the mind is really settled down and very still. In the moment-to-moment concentration, peace also comes. Ease, happiness also comes because the mind is not reacting to the changing experience. This begins to give you a sense of how mindfulness can be very powerful in our daily lives. If we can have this stability of mindfulness, which is concentration, this moment-to-moment concentration happening in our day, we can live our lives with much less reactivity. We can live our lives from this place of responsiveness instead of reactiveness, choosing wisely how to engage. So the peace in this moment-to-moment concentration really is coming from equanimity around change. The mind is balanced with all of this change. It's not thrown off. With all of the, typically our habitual way of dealing with change is we don't like it. Basically, we don't like change. You know, our whole lives are trying to somehow like create an environment where we have even just a few moments of, let's keep it like this for just a little while, you know, just a few minutes. Can I just have this stop for just a few minutes? We're struggling to try to keep things the way we like them to be. And if we could just imagine what it would be like to not be reactive to the way things change. Now, this doesn't mean that you're not responsive to the way things change, but non-reactive, at ease in the mind. So I want to stop there for a minute, see if there's any questions, comments, before I go on to talking about mindfulness practices. Yeah.
So I guess I could...
And use the mic, yeah.
...to ask about the aversion part.
Okay.
I have a lot of aversion, and I don't have any of those nice mindful states that you were talking about. And I'd like to have a little bit of nice mindful states to go with all the aversion I'm having. I know intellectually what you're telling me, but I still have sensations and I still am averting them.
Yes. Yeah, you know, so this I think comes, the exploration of this comes in the practices. So I'll answer a little bit here and then go on to talk about the practices if there's no other questions. Because, you know, sometimes when there's a lot of reactivity like that, you know, we have to use some wisdom. You know, sometimes, I mean, the basic instruction around reactivity is, you know, first of all, you know, to notice what it is that you're reacting to. You know, often it's something unpleasant, right? You know, there's something unpleasant happening. And the first kind of place to tease things apart is, what is the thing that you're reacting to? So what's the actual experience that you're reacting to, and what's the reactivity? So to clearly recognize the difference. Like, for instance, if it's a sound, you know, there's the sound that's happening. Maybe the leaf blower's going, you know, so there's the sound. And maybe it's got some unpleasant quality to it. It's got a lot of unpleasant ideas to it, probably, you know. We don't like that sound. And so to begin to kind of tease apart, what is the actual experience and what's the aversion? And we begin to recognize, okay, so what's going on is there's this aversion happening and there's the sound. And sometimes we might be able to recognize, well, actually, what we start to see there is that the aversion compounds the problem, you know, so we might be able to see that the sound itself is actually pretty minor compared to the aversion. And we really begin to get it that, wow, it's actually the mind doing this. You know, the mind is what's suffering here. And so with that information, we start to look at the aversion itself. So the way that the mindfulness practice unfolds, so if we're exploring this through practice, through mindfulness practice, part of the exploration would be to see if you can recognize, you know, what is this aversion? How does it feel? So it sounds odd. Some, you know, it's like, you know, I remember when I first heard this instruction, you know, I didn't even have a teacher. I had a book, and it's like, notice the experience of anger. It's like, yeah, right. What good is that going to do, you know? Isn't that just going to make it worse? Well, actually, when we attend to it with this kind of stance of what is aversion? What is the experience of aversion? It doesn't actually make it worse. It begins to create the conditions to have some space around it. And that can begin to happen pretty quickly. You may not have the aversion go away right away, but if you can begin to kind of be curious, okay, there's aversion here. What is aversion? How does it impact the body? You know, lots of tension, lots of clenching, lots of tightness. Okay, well, there's those experiences. Can I notice those? Can I be with that? So if you can explore it from that perspective, you may start to see, you may start to experience a little bit of space around the aversion and get a different relationship to it. Sometimes the aversion is strong enough that when we try to bring attention to it, it just like hooks back and we get more averse. So if that's what's happening, what I would encourage actually is like, would be more in the line of a concentration practice. Pick something else in your experience. See if you can find something else to pay attention to and let your attention be there. Give yourself a break from that thing. And I actually did this at the beginning of my practice. Anger was a huge thing in my life, and that's kind of how I got into the practice. In my daily life, I did explore the aversion, the anger, as best I could. In my sitting practice, I just did concentration. It's like, give myself a break from this anger, you know, just let myself settle down with my body and breathe. And it's like, what a relief, you know, I don't have to deal with that. And so this is where concentration practice can be really helpful at times. It can kind of give us a break from the aversion and give us a little bit of stability from which we might then be able to go back and work with some of that reactivity. So that's a real quick thing, but I may touch on some more of it later. Any other general questions about what? Yeah, over here.
You may touch more on this in the second half, but I was just curious about the difference or the similarities between responding and reacting.
Okay. Reacting, it's like reaction typically comes when we are operating from our conditioned patterns. Something happens, we don't like it, and we lash out. Something happens that we do like, we try to figure out ways to grab that. So it's the reactivity generally is coming because there's either something pleasant or unpleasant out there, and we either like it and want to have it, we want to hold on to it, or we don't like it, we want to get rid of it. So it's kind of a mind that's dealing with the stuff in the world and is kind of pushed and pulled by stuff that's happening around us. So that's reactivity. When we can be more or less reactive, when the mind can settle in, okay, there's unpleasant experience happening here, there's pleasant experience happening here, and not necessarily be, you know, get rid of it, lash out against it, or try to hold on to it, then the mind can be in a place of it can be in a place of balance where it doesn't have to respond in its habitual way, and can then, because it's more balanced, And because the heart is less contracted, this is a big part of it. With reactivity, our heart tends to be contracted. It tends to be operating out of fear. It tends to be operating on what can I have, what can I get, you know, holding to me, or you know, so it's like it's kind of contracted, that space of reactivity. When the reactivity begins to fall away, the heart is more open. There's more of a sense of meeting the world and like resonating with the world. And in that resonance with the world, there is a natural inclination to act when there is suffering, to alleviate that suffering out of compassion. And so it's not a contracted movement. It's actually an open-hearted movement to respond from compassion when there's suffering. There may be, when there's something beautiful happening there, that like when there's something lovely happening in the world, there can be the open-hearted response of joy and a response around joy. So it has the responsiveness has to do with the kind of the open-hearted feeling and acting without the contraction. Does that?
Oh, yes. Thank you very much.
Any other questions? Okay. So concentration practice and mindfulness practice. So, you know, we teach various kinds of meditation here. You know, we teach a lot of mindfulness meditation here. That's the basic form of practice that we encourage here, is for a form of mindfulness meditation. There's a lot of different kinds of mindfulness practice out there. One of my teachers told me that in Burma alone, there are 50 different kinds of mindfulness practice. So it's not like there's only one way to do this. I'll just talk a little bit about a couple different kinds of mindfulness practice to give you a little bit of a flavor. But first, what I'll say is that, you know, whether concentration practice or mindfulness practice, whichever kind of practice you're doing, both concentration and mindfulness are being cultivated and used. They're just being used in different ways and to different purposes. So with concentration practice, I'll start with concentration practice, actually, because it's a little bit simpler in a way to talk about. With concentration practice, as I said earlier, concentration, that one-pointed concentration, concentration practice generally is aimed towards cultivating that one-pointed concentration, choosing some experience to land on, and letting the mind rest there. And this is really helpful in a case of reactivity, when the mind kind of needs a break, you know, that just let your mind take a break, let it rest somewhere. So, you know, just mindfulness is used in this kind of practice because you picked something, and you picked something, the breath. Okay, I'm going to pay attention to the breath. And mindfulness is needed in this practice to recognize when the attention is on the breath and when it gets off the breath. So really simply, you know, the mindfulness can just know breath, not breath, breath, not breath. When it's not breath, the instruction is come back to the breath. This is for concentration practice. So it's a really simple form of meditation, very powerful in terms of settling the mind down. If the mind needs settling down, if it's really agitated, this form of meditation can be really helpful. So, choosing an experience, and when the mind wanders from that, coming back. Just the aim of this kind of practice is this one-pointed concentration. The aim is this stillness, this settledness, this composure, this collectedness. Lots of different things you could choose for concentration practice. The breath is one of the most common to choose. And others, you can metta practice, concentrating on the metta phrases. That's another form of concentration practice. Mantra practice, picking a phrase. There are practices of creating images in the mind. Here, the two main kinds of concentration practice that we explore are the breath meditation and the metta meditation. Then mindfulness practice is a shift of how we use the factor of attention, basically. In concentration practice, we use the factor of attention, the ability of the mind to pick something to pay attention to, and we put our attention on that thing just kind of in a very simple way. In mindfulness practice, rather than stabilizing the attention on some experience, we're looking at stabilizing just the attention itself, so that the mind doesn't wander. There's different ways to do this. As I said before, in mindfulness practice or mindfulness, this moment-to-moment concentration. So generally, I would say mindfulness practices are aimed at cultivating this moment-to-moment concentration. Just a rough distinction between mindfulness practices and concentration practices has to do with which kind of concentration they cultivate. Concentration practices, the one-pointed mindfulness practices tend to cultivate the moment-to-moment concentration. So mindfulness practices tend to be interested in exploring change, getting to know the changing nature of our experience. The mind can get very stable and still and know the flow, the flux of experience. So broadly speaking, concentration practices create a state of stillness, of peacefulness, and yet the state itself, that concentrated state, is not, the state itself of that concentration is not conducive to insight. It's a great place to hang out. It's a great place to take a break. It's a great place to feel good and give yourself a lovely, it's sometimes called a pleasant abiding. It's a very pleasant abiding, that place. When you come out of that place, whatever had been going on is still generally going on. Same, it may not have that much of an impact on your reactivity to other experience, because it's kind of like you're bypassing all the things you're reactive to and just saying, just come here, just come here, just come here, just come here. So you're training your mind to just be with something, but you're not training your mind about how to be at ease with the things you do react to. And so that state of concentration itself is not necessarily conducive to insight. In the mindfulness practices, what we are learning in the course of being with the flow of experience is just how we react. You know, something pleasant happens, we feel the leaning into it. Something unpleasant happens, we feel the contraction. And so in a mindfulness practice, we start to explore the reactivity in the present moment. As I was describing earlier, you know, we begin to get familiar with the ways we react. And one way that you can explore this, you know, I wouldn't necessarily, especially when it's major reactivity, you know, with major reactivity, it's a really great time to use some concentration practice. You might play around with smaller things that you don't like. You know, can you be aware of the little things, you know, The way you might feel a little annoyance at the way something sticks on a plate when you're washing it off. You know, just the little tiny ways that the mind reacts. Oh, okay, so what's that? How does that feel? You know, so you are aware, in mindfulness practice, you're aware of what's happening and how you're responding to it. The aim of mindfulness practices, generally, is stabilizing the mind so that it can be with changing experience, be non-reactive with changing experience, and that's the terrain of where insight arises. when we can, and just in little ways. I'll just give a couple examples. I mean, insight sounds like such a, like, you know, big word. But you might recognize, for instance, just, you know, something happens that you don't like, and you feel just the little clenching of, oh, don't like that. And in being aware of that clenching of don't like that, it releases. And then you're really just recognize, oh, there's that thing. And it's a little unpleasant. Wow. And whew, there's a sense of ease or peace in that moment around that experience. That it's just an unpleasant experience. It comes, it goes. We're not fighting experience. We're not fighting the changing nature of experience. This is the aim of mindfulness practices, to put us in a place of being able to understand how our minds react, and being able to see, with that understanding, being able to see that reactivity is optional. It's actually optional. It doesn't feel like it when we first start out, you know. It really feels like it's, you know, this thought arises in my mind of, you know, anger has to arise. But as we practice, we begin to actually recognize it's not necessary. It is optional. It's a thought can arise in the mind, and the mind can recognize, oh, there's a thought about that person. There's a thought about that person that I used to get really angry about. That anger is not arising right now. I've had that experience. It was quite startling the first time it happened. Again, that's a kind of insight. Seeing the arising of a thought about somebody that I was really, you know, had a really negative relationship to, and seeing in that moment that the mind didn't get angry. It was like mind-blowing. It's like I had not seen that person arise in my mind without getting angry. So the mindfulness practices begin to show us how our reactivity is optional. And it's a slow wearing away of that. It's not like you see it once and it's gone. But over time, it begins to wear away and wear down the ways that we react. So in terms of insight, in terms of that place where insight can happen, it happens when mindfulness gets more continuous. So when that moment-to-moment concentration is present, that's when we can see more clearly. That's when we can recognize, just like that seeing of that thought arising in my mind. The mindfulness needed to be pretty stable and present to see the thought arise. I mean, just to see, oh, there's a thought. I mean, it was a very, you know, kind of unfolding of, I was doing something, I was cutting an apple in the kitchen, and the thought arose in my mind about being with this other person at a fruit stand. It's like I could see the link between what I was doing and the thought that was arising. So the mind was very present. There was a continuity of mindfulness that could see the chain of events. And that seeing allowed the mind to just let go. It let go. So I'll stop here again for a moment. Any other comments or questions? Okay. I'll go on a little bit. So I've kind of talked in general now about mindfulness and concentration. And now I'd like to look at specific, you know, just a couple different kinds of mindfulness practice. Because there's many different ways in. And like the one of the main forms that we explore here is to start with paying attention to the breath. Now the breath can be used either to concentrate the mind or to cultivate mindfulness. And the distinction there has to do with whether you kind of pay attention just to just like a kind of a rhythm around the breath, or just a kind of a stable, like, you know, you're not looking at the details of the breath, or whether you actually are looking at how does the in-breath begin? How does it change during the in-breath? How do I know the in-breath ends? When does the out-breath begin? How does the out-breath change? How do I know the out-breath ends? So kind of turning the attention to the breath with respect to being interested in how the breath changes makes it a mindfulness practice. So again, the distinction between concentration and mindfulness has to do with, are you kind of attuning to change or letting your mind go to more stillness? So this is one of the main forms that we explore, one of the main forms of mindfulness practice that we start with. We often encourage people to start with paying attention to the breath. So it's almost like a hybrid of concentration and mindfulness. You pick one object, and anytime your mind wanders from it, you come back to that experience. So anytime you're not with the breath, you let go of that and come back to the breath. But you're interested in, or the over time, the mind, we encourage more interested in, how does the breath change? And so the changing nature of the breath becomes more, we start to see just the changing nature of experience. This takes the mind into the place of beginning to cut through. One of the things this does, this aspect of mindfulness begins to cut through how we relate to experience through concept. And, you know, we typically relate to the breath just as kind of a one thing. You know, it's like we may have in-breath, out-breath, but when we start to really look at the breath, we see, wow, you know, there's just so much happening there. It's like the in-breath turns into millions of little particles, and there's not, you can't really say what an in-breath is anymore. So the mindfulness practice begins to kind of undercut our relationship to the world through concept. This is a kind of a big area, a big kind of area. I could talk about that for a whole talk, so I won't try to do that right now. But it does begin to kind of, you know, when we relate to the world, you know, just think about how you relate to friends. Other people, you know, we often relate to them based on our ideas about them, right? We think about our friends and it's like, well, you know, we're waiting for a friend and this friend is always late or this friend is always on time. You know, we have concepts about our friends. This friend always reacts to that thing. This friend doesn't react to that thing. We have these ideas about our friends. And so we very often relate to our friends through those filters of expectation. And we feel this when other people do this to us. You know, we feel that, you know, we're being put in a box, we're being pigeonholed. And it's like, well, wait, I'm not always like that. We have a tendency to relate to other people, of experiences, through our ideas about them, through what we've learned about them in the past. And so this practice of mindfulness kind of begins to dive under the concepts to what is actually happening right here and right now. And it begins to point out that we actually know very little about what's actually going on. Our world of concept kind of keeps us at a very gross level of actual experience. And so the mindfulness practice begins to take us into the dynamic, changing, flowing experience. Now, a lot of our reactivity, we think we're reacting to an actual experience, but a lot of our reactivity is actually to ideas and concepts too. Concepts are a very interesting place to explore. So mindfulness begins to help us to basically see what's really going on moment to moment. So with the Mahasi practice, with the kind of practice that we practice here, Mahasi is a Burmese teacher. Mahasi Sayadaw is a Burmese teacher that some of the main teachers in this country, Joseph Goldstein, Jack Kornfield, Sharon Salzberg, Gill, practiced in the Mahasi tradition in Burma. And this is one of the main threads of meditation practice that's landed here in the West. This starting with the breath, noticing the changing experience of breath. And after a time, I went and practiced in Burma in this technique. And I was told to stay with the breath, stay with the breath, until I could stay with the breath for an hour. I had to be able to stay with the breath for an hour. And then they told me, okay, just notice whatever. So at that point, I let go of the breath, and just the instruction was just to notice whatever, the flow of experience in the present moment. And so that practice of cultivating that stability on the breath then is used to open up to the changing flow of experience, the dynamic changing flow of experience. Another approach in is from another teacher of mine from Burma, Sayadaw Utejaniya, and he starts pretty much just with straight mindfulness. He doesn't say you have to pick any object at all. He just says, just notice what's obvious, moment after moment. What's obvious right now? You know, just right now, what's obvious? The sound of my voice, the sound of the feeling of your body, the sound of the air conditioning. What's obvious? And how about now? Is it the same thing? Is it a different thing? What's obvious? So my teacher from Sayadaw Utejaniya just encourages this really, it's what I would call more a pure mindfulness practice, because it's not trying to start by stabilizing the mind anywhere. You just explore meeting the flow of experience and noticing how your mind reacts to it. And the mind will kind of wander, go out, get lost, get frustrated, and you watch it. You watch moment after moment what's happening. It tends to be a slower settle into the concentration. The practice of staying with one object, even looking at the changing nature of the breath, tends to create, it can tend to create a quicker way to the mind being settled. It can. And that's one reason why we sometimes encourage that. The other way in the pure mindfulness approach, I sometimes call that your mind 101, because what you get to really watch is how your mind relates to the world and begin to see the possibility of letting go of that reactivity. So there are so many different ways in. Concentration practice, really useful. Mindfulness practice is where the insights, the wisdom, the understanding will happen. We all have to find our own kind of way through this terrain. Some minds are more naturally attuned to concentration. You tell some people, you know, just stay with the breath. It's like, oh, thank goodness. You tell some people stay with the breath, it's like they're get really contracted, really tight. Tell those people, just notice the flow of experience in the present moment. It's like, oh, that's so much easier. There's so much less so much less struggle, or so much less tightness around that. So different minds have different doorways. And what I suggest in terms of exploring for yourself, pick the way that feels, or find the approach that feels the most easeful for you. And I think we've offered a range here, and so there's not one way. There's not one right way. That's what mostly I want to communicate here. There's not one right way. There's many doorways in. And it's time to stop. Thank you for your attention.